Forward momentum.
Someday, I'm gonna play here.
I'm sure you will, baby. And I'll be up front.
I got my license! I aced the test!
Excellent. I knew you would, so I got you a little something.
So, you ever think about, you know, getting married someday?
Sure, though I don't know why you'd want a broken down old coot like me.
Rick? Ricky? Baby? Please. No, baby, please don't be... Don't leave me all alone. My road has led me here. To her. To the monster who took him away. Now is the time. And here is the place. Ring it, bitch. And the rest is fire.
Forward Momentum presents Bubblegum Crisis. Mega Tokyo 2046. The story of the Night Sabers. Midnight, July 9th, 2046. A deserted section of the Loop Highway, Mega Tokyo.
Everything came down to that moment. Everything I am put into one strike with a pathetic little knife I used for stripping wire. The woman stood before me, less than 6 feet away. She hadn't moved. I hadn't batted an eyelash. She didn't have to. With a roar and a blast of hot air, there was suddenly another figure between us. Over 6 feet tall, mechanical, it looked like some kind of odd boomer, maybe? I shifted my lunge and the newcomer took it in the midsection. The knife snapped without even scratching the paint. The figure, with more grace than any boomer I'd ever seen, lashed out with its left hand and lifted me by the throat. A flash later, I was facing pavement as the thing held me pinned to the ground.
Stay down!
Relax, Lena. I think Miss Asagiri is confused. You were right. I should have let you make first contact with her.
The hell?
I was not attacking you, Miss Asagiri. And I'm not the one who murdered Richard, either.
I glared at her.
If my associate releases you, can we please get off the road and talk?
She opened her coat and turned slowly on the spot. She wasn't armed.
Why should I trust you?
You shouldn't. Yet. But if you come with me, you may be able to bring his killer to justice. If not, well, the police should be along shortly. You'll be arrested. And then...
She shrugged. Fine. I'll go with you. Just call off your boomer.
Oh, Lena's not a boomer. But that's for later.
She motioned and... Lena got off of me, even helped me to my feet. The woman then motioned over to where my pistol had fallen.
A gesture of trust, Miss Asagiri. Retrieve your weapon. Lena, would you please recover her motorcycle and return it to the truck?
It was only then that I realized Lena was actually wearing some sort of powered armor. I mean, I knew the military used those, but they were big, bulky things the size of trucks. This was barely larger than the human wearing it. And the wearer was pretty obviously female at that. She picked my bike up bodily and flew away.
Whoa.
Yep, I'm a real wordsmith.
Miss Asagiri? Please hurry and retrieve your gun. Time is pressing.
Office of Kate Madigan, Senior VP of Genom Corporate Affairs.
It was all too overwhelming.
I sat there, staring at the data, and still could not process the implications. It took me more than a week to get there. Careful inquiries, collating information, and even a bit of strong-arming to get access to this file. The revelation was more than I was prepared to believe. The Overmind system, what only a very few other employees of Genom knew as the OMS, wasn't just a corporate safeguard. It was much more. It didn't just keep all Boomer Core firmware in strict compliance to the norm. It literally monitored and verified all Boomer software across the globe. Anything a Boomer did, anything it saw, Genom knew. The secrets, the power of information, Genom could topple governments, reshape world policy to fit its own interests. In fact, if the records were right, it had done so on more than one occasion. Quincy Rosenkreutz didn't merely dominate the world economy, but the world itself. Flint was right. The bastard. But what to do about this? I thought I knew what Flint's plan was. Seize effective control of the OMS and use it to force Quincy out. But we weren't talking about boardroom politics anymore. The game was much bigger than that. I didn't think even Brian realized what was happening. If the chairman didn't trust his own right-hand man... My blood ran cold. If Rosenkreutz expected I knew the shape of things, no one would ever find my body. I'd been careful not to leave a trail, but it wasn't inconceivable that some clever hacker could track me down. All right, then. I'd need to prove that I wasn't a liability. Fine, I could do that. I stabbed the call button and summoned my assistant from out in the suite's reception area.
Yes, Miss Madigan?
My assistant, like all staff-level positions at Genom Tower, was a Boomer. They had highly advanced software designed to enhance their ability at conversation and other interactions with humans. This one was a very pleasant-looking male model, with artificial hair styled neatly and dressed in a business suit of sharp cut and neutral tones. Indeed, aside from the obviously artificial tone of flesh, he could have passed for human. I need to see Thomas Flint. Get me his location. Have a team begin covert monitoring at once.
Will that be all?
I nodded and the Boomer left on its errand. I didn't like using it for this sort of thing. But in this instance, I wanted to leave a trail to be followed. If it went to plan, I'd be delivering Flint's head in a box.
Surface Streets, Megatokyo.
We drove for a couple hours. The first 20 minutes or so in complete silence.
My name,
the driver finally began,
is Celia Stingray.
The name meant nothing to me.
I imagine you have a number of questions, but let me try to answer several of them at once. Did Richard ever tell you about working for Wiz Laboratories?
No. What about it?
More to the point. He was the last survivor of the staff at Wiz. He was a night security guard there while attending college.
All right. So, how does that relate to his murder?
He was the only person outside my father's development team who was there that night.
Your father?
Dr. Carl Stingray, head of the Cyberdroid team and founder of Wiz Laboratories.
That was where I'd heard her last name before. Carl Stingray was the scientist who'd invented Boomers. But he'd worked for Genom, hadn't he? I guess the confusion showed. Celia continued.
The very night the Cyberdroid first came online, there was an explosion in the lab. Everything was consumed by the resulting fire. Records, the Cyberdroid itself, the scientists working on it.
Her father. I'm sorry.
It was a long time ago.
She shot me a grateful look, then continued.
A short time later, I came into possession of a data unit. It contained a scrap of video footage that suggested the explosion was not an accident.
Suggested?
Oh, I know who caused it. I just can't prove it. The bastard is powerful, connected. I need rock-solid evidence, such as the only surviving eyewitness who would have been able to place the murderer at the scene.
Ricky.
Yes. He vanished right after the explosion. I think he was being framed by the true criminals. I'm positive that they're responsible for his death as well.
You know who they are? Tell me! By this time, we'd wandered into the northern edges of the city. Celia pulled off the highway and followed a darkened side street until we crested a hill. Then she pulled over.
There he is. The man who killed your lover and murdered my father is in there.
She pointed through the windshield and straight to Genom Tower.
Somewhere in that kilometer-wide cone of steel is the man responsible for all of this.
She turned and glared at me.
You think you could just storm in there and put a bullet in the bastard's brain? You think you can decapitate the biggest economic juggernaut in history with a Saturday night special?
Cold rationality had no place in this discussion. I mean, she was right, of course, but it just didn't matter. If I have to, yeah, it'll kill me, but I will see him dead first.
What if there was a way to get your pound of flesh and live to celebrate it?
It was then I remembered her friend in the powered armor, Lena. Lady, who the hell are you? She smiled.
My name is Celia Stingray. I'm the leader of the Nightsabers.
Celia extended a hand.
And I want to offer you a job.
AD Police Headquarters, Dispatch Area.
There are times I hate being the Nightsaber's secret contact in the police. No, they can't keep in contact with Nene. She's at work. It may blow her cover. It may get us all busted. She's just here all alone worrying herself sick. Sorry. I just had to get that off my chest. So far as I knew, Lena and Celia made contact with the biker punk, but that was it. When the cops actually arrived, all they found was some broken fiberglass and a bent broken blade from a pocket knife. So I sat there, staring at my cell phone and wishing it would ring. When it eventually did, I emitted a whoop of joy. That's right, joy, not fright or surprise. I was only expressing my happiness. Hello?
Hey.
Lena! Hi.
We still on for chick flicks and cheesecake after your shift?
More Nightsaber code. Lena was fine and back in the truck. Celia wasn't there. Sure, what you got in mind?
How about a classic, My Fair Lady?
Ah, the story of a young flower girl brought off the streets and taught to be a proper lady. Celia was with the biker punk then. Never seen it. Hope it ends well.
Me too. How much longer you got?
About 40 minutes. My console beeped, pulling my attention away. Gotta run. Something came up. I'll be by after shift.
Okay, see ya.
Lena hung up as I started bringing up windows. One of my stealthier scout programs had been sitting at the Genom mainframe's doorstep for weeks, sniffing out weak points for possible entry. It was detecting some odd activity. On the surface, it looked like routine inquiries, but they were going to addresses I'd never seen before. The same requests with just slightly different IDs attached. Intrusion programs. Had to be. I retasked the scout to passively sweep back along the incoming attack. If I could trace it back to the source... My screen went black. Then the power went out. To the entire building! In fact, to several square blocks! The emergency generator kicked on a moment later, the intercom demanding status reports from all sections. Whoever was behind that data attack was good. Good enough to trace me and cut city services on a moment's notice. Things like this just don't happen. Not to me! Oh, it is on, asshole!
Old Cybergenics Facility, Yokohama.
My car glided to a halt, and my companion smoothly stepped out, one surveying the landscape, the other genially helping me to my feet. I led the way into the building's foyer. The receptionist was a young woman, an odd choice for this day and age. I flashed my corporate ID and glowered at her. We were never here. The girl took one glance at the muscular brutes flanking me and the ID in my hand and tried to swallow with a dry throat. We were passed through without comment. I couldn't blame her. I staged this with care. My escorts were brand new BU-55C model bodyguard boomers. While they were contained in synth flesh and wore nondescript black business suits, there was no mistaking them for anything other than enforcers. Between them and myself, the poor kid probably peed her pants. Flint's receptionist, on the other hand, was a more appropriate feminine boomer. No amount of intimidation would work. Instead, I merely showed my ID once more. Override. Deactivate all security monitoring for this office and shut down for the night. The boomer cocked her head for a moment, then relaxed into the chair as all systems went offline. Being in charge of Ginnam's nastier side had its advantages. A jerk of my head and one of my escort boomers turned to face the outer office door, ensuring we would not be disturbed. Once I was certain of my privacy, I activated the microcamera transmitter array in my necklace. It would send a complete record of my meeting to my assistant back at Ginnam Tower. From there, it would be relayed to the chairman's office directly, marked urgent. I could only hope that Quincy would understand my actions. By dealing with the threat directly, by showing loyalty, maybe I could escape with my skin. I debated how flashy an entrance to make. A moment later, my remaining bodyguard smashed the inner office door with a well-placed kick, the reinforced musculature and hydraulic rams in his legs, reducing the wooden door to splinters. I've a reputation to maintain, after all. I calmly followed him in, to find that he'd already hauled Flint from his desk and had him pinned painfully to the wall.
Well, someone has trust issues.
You're insane.
I take it then that your research was successful?
Successful? Do you have any idea the Pandora's box you've opened?
Far better idea than you have, my dear.
He was testing me again, or at least he thought he was. I'll admit, part of me had to admire him. The little weasel knew I had him cold, and yet he was still swaggering. It occurred to me he must still have an ace in the hole. He already had enough rope to hang himself. Why not give him a little more? Far be it from me to deny your moment. Tell me what you're planning.
I see. Hermes, identify the boomer in my office.
Identified. Orders, Mr. Flint?
Initiate stand-down routine, please.
And abruptly, the boomer was relaxing, stepping back, and obviously entering standby mode. I couldn't believe what I had just seen. Reflexively, my hand whipped beneath my jacket and came out with my pistol. What the bloody hell did you just do? Flint just stood there, adjusting his tie.
What good is knowing about the OMS if you can't do anything with it?
I eyed him steadily.
I'm sure you're a good company girl, and this boomer is keyed only to respond to you.
The bastard wasn't concerned at all that I had a 9mm on him. He really did think he was holding all the cards.
Hermes, have my new friend disarm Miss Madigan.
In a blink, my own bodyguard removed the pistol from my hand and pinned me to the floor by the neck.
Release her at once! Sorry about that, Miss Madigan. Hermes still has a few bugs. Must have tripped a different routine than I intended.
Flint stepped over and offered me a hand up, which I ignored, and rose on my own.
I trust the implications do not escape you.
You can override Boomer security software.
Far more than that. With Hermes, I can seize control of any Boomer, anywhere in the world, at any time.
My blood ran cold. Boomers were everywhere. If Flint could override any of them... His smile became positively vulpine. I had to get him to show me his whole card. What is Hermes?
The apex of decades of research. The culmination of everything cybergenics worked for.
A bit more specific, if you please.
Hermes is a protein-based heuristic system. A true artificial intelligence. It can think, reason, and implement ideas several thousand times faster than a human being.
And it only answers to you?
Of course. When Ginnam butchered the cyberdroid's intelligence, their greatest crime was not understanding what they were destroying. Simplifying the system doesn't guarantee control, but making it grow where only you direct, that will always ensure it does what we wish.
The sheer arrogance of this man. He still didn't fully comprehend the forces he was playing with. You said the system still had a few bugs. I need another demonstration.
Very well. What do you have in mind?
A system like this must have fine control of individual units, correct? Can you show me a specific list of boomers operating in Mega Tokyo? A display screen shimmered to life in the air before me. Various icons blinked, superimposed over a map of the city. I selected three at random. More data appeared regarding each icon. Two were construction model boomers working on the eastern edge of town. The last was a waitress model at a small diner near the rift. What can we make them do?
Anything. Change their behavior, wipe their memory, alter their set tasks. We can even remove them from OMS control.
What happens if you do that?
Theoretically, they should just shut down. But to be honest, we've never tried that before.
Do it then. Remove them from the OMS.
You heard the lady, Hermes. Do it.
Industrial area, eastern edge of central Mega Tokyo.
After what seemed like forever, Celia finally pulled into an underground parking garage. The building above was the sort of permanent prefab structure that sprung up in the early days after the quake. It stood maybe six stories, had no exterior signage. It was one of a host of others like it hugging the river that separated the central and eastern portions of town. It had probably begun life as emergency housing or supply warehousing, but I doubt the original architect would recognize it now. The short ramp led to a roll-up door and a security scanner. Celia gave the computer a thumbprint and a voice scan, and when she told the computer to record mine as well, it further asked for a scan of Celia's retina before proceeding. The door opened, and we proceeded through a second security shutter as well. This one looked like it could take fire from a main battle tank.
Welcome to home base. Our facility here is mostly underground. Some of the less sensitive areas are housed on the first floor, but towards the interior of the building. To an outside scan, it looks just like a normal warehouse with offices on the upper floors.
A bit much, isn't it? Celia shrugged.
This is our armory and design center. You'll understand the precautions in a moment.
She pulled into what looked for all the world like a cargo loading dock and parked the car next to a large truck. Stepping out, Celia keyed us through another surprisingly beefy door and took us into a sci-fi geek's wet dream. Banks of computer monitors, fabrication equipment, CAD design stations, robotic armatures for assembly, some of which were moving around what might have been one of those power armor suits I saw earlier. I swear, if R2-D2 had rolled around the corner, it wouldn't have surprised me. But it wasn't a squat little beeping robot who greeted us. It was a kid. He was 17, 18 tops. He bore a strong resemblance to Celia, and the tool belt he wore and the sheer amount of grease on his coveralls and hands showed him to be master of this particular domain.
Zis! So, this is our new recruit?
Yes, she is. Pris, this is my younger brother Mackie. He's in charge of the maintenance of our hardware and various other tasks.
The kid looked a bit offended. His retort was cut off by another voice from deep in the facility.
Is that Celia? Did that crazy biker queen say yes or what?
The speaker trailed off as she came around the corner. She was a young Japanese lady, probably about my age. She wore a ridiculously tight outfit that looked as though it had been sprayed on her bare body. A glint of reflected light looked like some sort of circuitry woven into the material.
Lena, I'd like you to meet Pris. And yes, she will be joining the Night Sabers.
Lena looked more than a little embarrassed, but she extended a hand anyway.
Lena Yamazaki, nice to meet you.
You too. We shook. Lena moved with a sort of grace and precision that all but shouted good in a fight to me. Besides, I'd been called worse. I don't mean to pry, but what exactly are you wearing? Celia smiled and started to explain, but Mackie cut her off.
It's a soft suit. You wear one under the armor you saw earlier, which is called a hard suit.
The soft suit is lined with hundreds of sensors, which read motor nerve impulses as they travel to various muscle groups. Our hard suits weigh upwards of 300-400 pounds. Way too much to physically carry, and without the soft suit's data, it would move far too slowly to be effective in combat.
Combat? What the hell do you fight?
Boomers, mainly. A hard suit is designed to combat rogue boomers that are outside the AD police's ability to handle. Heavy construction models, or even most military models.
But there aren't military boomers. Not in Japan, anyway.
One of Genom's main manufacturing plants, the BU-9B anti-armor boomer, is located 30 minutes from here. Laws, treaties, Quincy Rosenkreutz uses them all for toilet paper.
Wow, there's an image to haunt nightmares. So, this is what you want me for? To put on one of these hard suits and destroy berserk boomers?
And in doing so, help bring down the corrupt men who took both my father and your lover from this world. Yes.
What do you say to something like that? I could almost feel Rick's ghost breathe in my ear as I looked at the insane technology around me, and the three determined people who waited for my answer. What else could I say? I'm in.
AD Police Headquarters.
I'm usually a sweet and lovable girl. Really. I don't often get mad. I keep it in, keep it controlled. So when I tell you that I was ready to rip somebody's head from their neck and use it for a chamber pot, you'll understand the enormity of it. The data made no sense whatsoever. On the surface, it was just a simple brute force attack on what I would have sworn an hour ago was a standalone computer network within Genom Tower itself. What was so odd, however, was the origin of said attack. Genom was hacking itself? Was someone in the cyber defense section really that bored? I prop my chin in a hand while I trace the lines again. Maybe I missed something. Maybe the initial intrusion was a decoy. 3 new ID signals from whatever this intrusion program was. I focused attention on them and... my countermeasures screamed an alarm, and my computer died for the second time that night. My chin slipped, and my forehead banged into the desk in disgust. Don't get me wrong, I'm damn good. I could slice through this little tangle in no time if I were at home or at Celia's. Her system is nearly as powerful as mine, and it's not traceable. But I was sitting at my desk, at work... at my job with all the little rules about the use of police property and laws against cyber warfare. Screw the man holding me down. I could take this bitch if my hands weren't tied. A beeping alarm over my police comm earpiece snapped me back to the moment. 2 sharp mouse clicks and all the illicit software readouts were whisked off the screen. Replaced by the emergency ADP data feed and unit readiness trackers. Behind me, other dispatch officers were racing into their positions, but I was already relaying the incoming go orders. TAC Unit 3 Dispatch. 2 heavy construction models at job site in the Edogawa district. Civilian casualties unknown. Ambulances responding. Use of B-level equipment authorized. I paused, and my eyes widened at a blinking additional. Code 12. Red. Code 12 meant the boomers were attacking people. Adding red to it meant they were slaughtering everything in their path. On the other end of the comlink, Leon McNichol, the officer in charge of Squad 3, swore.
Fucking hell! Dispatch, TAC 3 is rolling. Get an authorization for C-level equipment as quick as you can.
C-level was the highest we had. It was nigh on military-grade firepower. Using it in a tight urban environment was all but admitting there was going to be a lot of dead civilians when this was over. Request sent. Be careful. This one looks bad.
Thanks, Nene. Try and expedite the authorization.
You'll have it, even if I have to kick down the chief's door.
Right. TAC 3 out.
I started the request up the ladder, ramming it through where necessary. As I did so, I heard the dispatcher the next desk over finish relaying a totally different set of orders to a different squad. I shot her a look. When she had a moment, she explained.
Code 12 in Shibuya. Just a blue, though.
I relaxed a bit. Blue. Only minor injuries possible. Near the rift?
Yeah. A Rachel's boomer is pouring coffee all over the patrons.
Considering the nightmare Leon was heading into, that sounded downright comical. Don't you think two separate incidents at the same time is a bit odd? Two incidents, three boomers. The realization hit me like a Mack truck. Those odd signals, could they have caused this? If so, someone could cause boomer riots at will. I brought up data on the waitress incident. Hey Naoko, could you cover my desk for a couple minutes? I have a friend who lives in the apartments above that cafe. I want to warn her off. It was really breaking regs, but Naoko agreed. Bless her. I grabbed my cell phone from my pocket and stepped out of the office. First, I need to get Leon some guardian angels.
Nightsaber's home base.
I floated up to my chin in a pool of some sort of nasty-smelling gel. My arms were extended straight out to either side of me, and my legs were together and pointed straight down, toes barely grazing the floor of the little glass chamber I was in. The odd sensation of having been stabbed into a giant tub of rancid jello would have been bad enough, but I was also naked. Celia said this process was to definitively trace all my motor neurons for the data-gathering soft suit I would need. She was monitoring the process in the other room with Mackie and an elderly guy named Henderson, who'd shown up a little while after we did. Henderson was another oddball for the bunch. He was half mad scientist, half butler. Between his demure black garb and his mannerisms, I kept almost calling him Alfred. So you had to go through this too? I asked Selena, who sat in the room with me outside the tank of whatever it was.
Yeah, I know it feels weird, but it's almost over.
Weird doesn't begin to cover it. I keep feeling like someone's watching me.
All they see on the monitors in there is a silhouette of your body. An outline. Over where the found nerves are traced. Like a doctor's x-ray.
Sure the kid doesn't have a regular camera in here?
Knowing Mackie, he probably does.
We're finished. Pris, you'll feel some suction as the gel drains. When the glass raises, you can go clean up in the shower to your right. Lena, can you come in here, please?
The gel drained out, and a moment later, I scampered across the cold floor into the bathroom to scrub off the rest of the disgusting stuff. I toweled off and dressed. And then, after a bit of searching, I found Mackie in what Celia called the operations center.
Oh, Pris, good timing. Our contact at the AD police just told us about a major boomerite. A bad one. Celia and Lena are on the way to try and help. Henderson's driving the truck.
Truck?
A sort of mobile version of this place. We used it to deploy the hard suits without it tracing back here. Sis and Lena are just about to put their armor on. Wanna watch?
Lena's earlier comment about Mackie and cameras echoed. I raised an eyebrow at him.
Oh, not like that! Play one prank and no one forgets. No, I just thought you'd like to see the process before you'd go through it.
He brought up a camera feed. Celia and Lena were making hurried checks of what I took to be their empty hard suits. The empty units looked like the pelts of skinned animals split down the sides, from the top of the shoulders all the way to the knees. Lena's was the green and gray I remembered. Celia's was a very pale bluish-white. Mackie talked me through what they were doing.
See the metal paws on their soft suits, near the ears? That's part of the control system. The activated hard suit can be controlled through a heads-up display or by vocal commands to the onboard computer. Right now, their computers are relaying system checks to them before they physically put the armor on.
As I watched, Lena stepped into hers. Her feet plunged down into the suit's calves like a pair of boots.
You start with the feet. Your full weight on the interior foot pads activates the artificial musculature.
Lena was now leaning forward, resting her torso against the breastplate and slipping her hands down into the suit's arms.
The suit's joints have an advanced ballistic material over the musculature. Once the arms are in, the system tightens up and aligns the wrist and elbow joints. and all the weapon systems are controlled from the hands inside the suit.
When Lena straightened up again, the suit rose with her and sealed itself from her feet up to her neck.
She'll do a few stretches, just to make sure everything's moving right. When the system's active, the suit actually moves at the same pace you do. It doesn't feel like you're wearing it at all.
Interesting. You mentioned a heads-up display.
Yeah, inside the helmet. Your communications are controlled by toggle switches you can hit with your draw. Any other suit systems can be controlled via the HUD. Cameras in your visor track your eye position like a computer mouse. Look at an icon and blink an eye to click the mouse button.
That sounds like information overload waiting to happen.
It can be, which is why the suit is also voice-activated. Unless you have your exterior speakers on, no one outside the hard suit can hear what you're saying.
Celia had finished donning her armor as well. Her voice came over the room's speakers.
Mackie, if you're done giving Pris the basics, get back to work on her soft suit. Henderson can handle oversight from the truck once we're deployed.
Mackie stabbed a button on the console.
Sis, you're going into combat without electronic cover. Focus on your own situation. I know how to handle my end.
Of course, little brother.
She waved and the camera feed closed. It was only then that I realized that Mackie had been yammering like that to cover the fact he was worried. Now that I got a good look, he was all but tearing his hair out. Nervous?
Yeah, a bit. This isn't our first fight. It's fifth, actually. But this time we're shorthanded and... And I'm not there.
Is that what you meant when you said without cover?
More or less. Usually I'm the driver in the truck and can help with on-the-spot issues. Henderson stays here and keeps an eye on the Hardsuit's telemetry for us. But now he's doing both jobs. And on top of that...
He hooked a thumb into the mechanic bay.
Nene is in here. That's her suit there. In the field, her job is to make sure the Hardsuits are being observed electronically or scanned by outsiders, protect our data stream, stuff like that. Without her... Let's just say I have a bad feeling about this.
I put a reassuring hand on his shoulder. Come on, kid. Let's finish up our job. You know, idle hands and all that. He groused, as only a teenager can. But he got up and slouched along behind me into the work bay.
Boomer Riot. Construction site in the Edogawa District, Eastern Megatokyo.
As the truck barreled towards the chaos, Lena and I climbed up the access ladder to the rooftop launching pad. Both of our hard suits were capable of true flight via jet assist packs. We would enter the combat area from above. I activated my suit jets and my wings rotated up and snapped into position. The repulsors fired, and with a leap, I was airborne. Lena was right behind me, riding her own column of fire. The AD police had been smart. Instead of going straight for the rampaging boomers, they'd kept the pair distracted while evacuating civilians and establishing a containment zone. Then waited for clearance to use their heavier weaponry. Predictably, Nene informed me, it was held up in bureaucratic red tape. We alighted on the roof of a nearby building. The ADP airborne units hadn't spotted us yet, but as soon as we moved in, they probably would. Damn it! This wasn't what I'd created the Nightsabers for. We're not just some pack of vigilantes here to do the jobs the politicians wouldn't let the cops do. But at the end of the day, I couldn't let this go on. I zoomed my optics a bit tighter and surveyed the scene. The boomers, designed to carry and fuse massive steel girders into place, had done what rogue boomers always do. They'd found new ways to implement their primary programming. Human bodies lay in bloody shreds below. Some were burned from hot rivets and welding plasma. A few had been crushed by steel beams. Some were civilians. Many more were AD police, fallen in duty to the city that ignored them. There they were, the two machines driven mad by whatever had been done to them. Their bodies had also suffered from the fighting. Squat torsos scored by carnage. Reinforced limbs oozed a mix of lubricants and artificial blood.
Oh my god!
Lena exclaimed over our tactical channel.
Is that what I think it is? Thermal image, just behind those monsters!
I blinked into my HUD, and the visual spectrum was overlain by thermal and infrared signatures. There, near the path of the rampaging machines, huddled the unmistakable outline of a small human form. A child hid within some debris. They were within reach of the nearest boomer. Henderson! These are standard CU-9 models, correct?
Yes, mistress. Uploading the location of the AI cores to your targeting systems now!
One of the brutes was already turning in the child's direction. Lena, tasers! We fell upon them. On the way down, Lena made perfect casting motions with her left hand, and one armor-penetrating vibroblade-tipped taser knife sunk into each target, followed by a flooding cascade of electrical current. Both boomers froze in agony. As I dropped, I extended my suit's vibroswords from each wrist. They snapped into place and began to hum gently. I brought both fists down, blade first, into the skull of one boomer. The blade sank into the armor easily, cutting and slicing cleanly through the artificial brain. It fell to the pavement, the light in its maddened eyes dying out. Lena's taser charge exhausted, her suit had automatically cut the trailing wires from her wrist. As I checked to make sure the boomer was dead and the child safe, she danced away from the maddened swipes of the other boomer. This one was armed with a plasma torch, strictly short range, but dangerous nonetheless. It sent a gout of fire at her and followed it up with a lunging grab. Lena used her jetpacks to leap clear of the white-hot plasma, but the boomer's massive hand closed around her left, the one protected only by ballistic mesh. I rushed toward them, but bless her, Lena was still faster. Her armored right fist lashed out and slammed into the center of the boomer's chest. Whereas the taser darts are Lena's primary long-range weapon, she has a very deadly in-close arsenal as well. On her suit's right fist is a device she nicknamed the Knuckle Bomber. It's a sonic emitter designed not to penetrate armor, but to reach through it to more sensitive areas. Her punch dented the boomer's armor. The Knuckle Bomber blew a foot-wide hole straight through the thing's chest, obliterating the AI core on the way. The dead remains toppled to the ground. Are you all right?
Broken, at least. Hurts, though.
Her head snapped up.
Damn, the cops spotted us.
A dozen or so heavily armed AD police were rushing towards us. Calmly, I bent down over the twisted metal sheet that had concealed the child from the rampaging boomers and moved it aside. A young boy stared up at me. I switched to my PA speakers. My voice came out filtered and modulated.
Go on, little one. Go to the police. You're safe now.
The boy jumped to his feet and bolted, not stopping until he was safely behind the only cop not wearing body armor. I switched back to our channel. Well, if it isn't our friend, Inspector McNichol. Lena flashed him a sort of salute, two fingers in the vague vicinity of her temple, and we jetted off into the night.
You've been listening to Bubblegum Crisis Blades, Episode 3, a Forward Momentum production. Based on the anime Bubblegum Crisis, which is copyright AIC Artmic. Featured in this episode were Taylor Carlson as Pris, Kristen Yearington as Celia Stingray, Jen Rhodes as Kate Madigan, and Lindsay Steinler as Nene Romanova. Also heard in this episode were Rina Adachi as Lena Yamazaki, Mike Dent as Mackie Stingray, Chris Walker as Henderson, Michael Valenzuela as Thomas Flint, Christopher Stadther as Leon McNichol, Eric Ulp as Hermes, and Kuchiki Huda as Naoko Tanaka. This is Dylan Spencer. The episode was written and directed by Devin Cox. Music for the series is drawn primarily from the Bubblegum Crisis anime. For a complete music and vocal credit list, please visit forwardmomentumproductions.com/BGC. Bubblegum Crisis Blades is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Bubblegum Crisis, the music, and non-original sound effects used herein remain the property of their original creators. No infringing claims are intended.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to this Forward Momentum production. If you'd like to hear more, you can visit our website at, all one word, forwardmomentumproductions.com. There you'll find links to all our audio dramas, as well as Forward March, our news and information podcast. If you'd like to send us some feedback, you can send us an email at forwardmomentumproductions@gmail.com, use the contact form on our website, or you can leave us a voicemail at North American Area Code 585-54-AUDIO. 585-54-AUDIO. Thank you once again for listening.